Joining me are Canadian award-winning pop rock duo Manic Drive, who just received a Juno nomination for their latest album, Volume 1. And they're here today to talk about their latest album, what is next for them, and how did their passion for music begin. Welcome.
Thanks for having us. What's up?
Yeah. Welcome, Sean and Michael. You know, I it's Cavallo, right? Your last name?
Cavallo.
Yes, Cavallo. And, you know, so I find it very cool and a blessing to be brothers and formed your band, I understand, in 2004. And I just think it's just so cool. I mean, how many brothers and I mean, there are obviously, but I mean, you know, I just find it cool. Do you ever get feedback from that?
Yeah, no, what? Like, well, it's pretty common in the music circles, because usually that's where it starts, like just two children, usually peers, that start music, and that's instead of playing video games, they're jamming on a guitar or a drum set or something like that. So it's actually pretty common, and we see it a lot, siblings and bands or things like that. But yeah, as far as the dynamic, obviously, a lot about being a band is how you gel with the other person. So having a family member, usually you're pretty grounded and connected in that sense. So there is like an opportunity to have a little bit of an edge when it comes to songwriting, performing, and just, you know, telling people straight up, like, they need to improve on something, you know. You get that with family, right?
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. And is there a huge age difference between you?
I think we're 18 months, right? Yeah, 28 years.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think it's so, like, you know, as I said, it's a blessing when you have, you know, two successful brothers performing and millions of hits. And where did this passion come from? And I understand your father's a huge supporter.
Oh, yeah. Well, sure. Michael, did you want to take this one? Yeah, sure. I'll take it. I got you, bro. Our father was very musically inclined, and both our parents would take us out to these sort of local concerts, most of them which took place in the basement of these churches in the Toronto area. And the roots was actually a lot of gospel and Christian music, the reason why we sort of reached out in that field and pursued sort of the gospel scene in Christian music was because of that. And we would just rock out to these bands. We must have been, oh gosh, 6, 7 years old. You know, it's sort of family fun events, right? So these hard rock metal bands were pretty clean, but they were just, you know, sweating and moving their hair back and forth. And we're like, this, like, our destiny called us in that moment when they saw these dudes with ripped jeans and long hair whipping around. We're like, we want to be this. And so that really quite literally struck a chord with us. And then we started buying all these different albums, both in Christian and the mainstream audience, in fields and industries and styles, and anything from rock, funk. I mean, our father was a big fan of the 70s funk and soul, so Doobie Brothers and the Earth, Wind & Fire and Stevie Wonder. And Sean and I loved a lot of 90s rock. And then, I mean, it's just all over the place. But yes, it's been a journey and a passion of ours since, you know, basically out of diapers. And I just got out 2 months ago, so.
You know, and when was your very first break?
Oh, I would say, Sean, we actually hit up with one of our musical heroes, Stryper, back in 2009.
Wow.
And just finishing that tour, we had just released our sophomore album called Blue. And Walls, the leading single from that album, hit a large syndicated review network called Air One, which really put us on a international level, especially in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 250 or so stations that picked us up? And that climbed up right up to number one for us. And so that created a lot of opportunity and a lot of ground for us to get on the road and tour with a lot of notable acts. And so I would say that was about a turning point for us. There's been other opportunities along the way, but I think that's more or less a good start.
Yeah, for us, there was never just a big break. It always came in like steps.
depths and intervals and stuff. Like, I was going to say our biggest break would have been Winter Jam, which was an arena tour throughout the United States in 2019. But obviously that wouldn't have happened without the radio success. So it's always just this compiling the steps to get to where we were at today. And even some of the smaller stuff that we probably don't think are as big have all contributed to where we're at now.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, I'm going to disagree with you, Don, and say that Frank was like the 2015 Juno award that we
It wasn't
a giant climb. It was in steps. I think that's a good way to describe our journey.
Yeah, so you won a Juno in 2015, and also for your recent Juno nomination was for Contemporary Christian Gospel Album of the Year, correct? And this is this your seventh album?
That is a great question. Let me count. VIP was for sure our fifth, because it was our V, and then Into the Wild 6, and then Volume 1. Is that right, Sean? Seven?
Yep.
Seven.
Wow. And this is Volume 1. And, like, who are your fans?
Our fans? Most of them are Jay and our dad.
Yeah, that's not.
our fans are relatively, I guess I say youthful. A lot of young people really come out, but because I guess we're a little, as we're talking about, a little seasoned. We've even had a bit of an older demographic as well, but we're still impacting a lot of young people, and we're going to have to say thanks to, like, platforms like Dude Perfect, that has a beautiful young audience in the sort of sports realm of things that really, again, created a whole new platform for us, reaching a brand new audience, a very, very young audience. So, I mean, yeah, I would say it's still young and cool and hip. Would you agree, Sean?
Yeah. I've checked the demographics before, and usually it's like 18 to 35, I would say, is like 70% of our listeners. It's kind of like family friendly fun, I guess, you know. It's pop rock, so a lot of people are gonna get.
Yes. I mean, your dad is your biggest fan, you know, and he must be so proud, you know, and he was at the Junos, you know, and so, you know, this journey, I mean, you know, as you said, you know, little by little, you know, and I was wondering, and I wanted to ask you at the beginning, but how did you come up with the name for your band?
Sean, really like the word. Before you interrupted me, brother, don't forget I'm the favorite. Sean really liked the word manic. I think at the time there was another band called Manic, but we were like, yeah, Manic, that's cool. We like Manic, but Manic, what? We want to have a little depth to the name. So, you know, we threw out a bunch of words and then finally Drive, but to be driven, as in to pursue something with a passion, to, you know, manically. And we thought that was kind of appropriate in what we did, and we were hitting the road pretty hard at that time as young kids. And we also thought it sounded really cool. You know, we just passed on rock and roll, but basically to manically and with great passion pursue, you know, faith, love, and the pursuit of happiness. That sounds very American, by the way, but anyways.
Yes, you know, and you're on the album you have Sugarcoated and I've Listened, and then High Life, and then Thank God I'm Alive. I mean, you have two videos. The Thank God I'm Alive, I like to talk about how did that, you know, or do you both write separately? Like, how does it work, you know, when you're writing songs? Like, can you tell our listeners how you do it?
Each song is very different. Thank God I'm Alive is a very personal one. Actually, Sean, why don't you share that journey?
So, back in early 2020, January 2020, our mother passed away, which took a pretty big toll on the band. And during that kind of grieving process, this song kind of came out. It wasn't meant to be even a manic drive song. It wasn't meant to be a single or anything. was kind of just writing from the heart, kind of what art is supposed to do, just, you know, a tool for expression. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote it, showed it to the guys, and we're like, you know what, let's run with this. Like, we just felt like it was something that other people needed to hear, because obviously there was a lot of turmoil going on shortly after that. You know, in March 2020, a pandemic hit, and a lot of people were I want to say distracted with a lot of negativity. And we thought the song was just a cool reminder, just being like grateful and thankful for what we got. Mm. And so we released the song out there, and, you know, it hasn't been our biggest hit, but it has really connected with some of our fans or people that needed to hear it. So we're glad we did it. It means a lot to us. And, you know, it's a lot more somber than the stuff we usually write, but we're glad we did it, because, you know, people, I think it's important where fans or listeners just want to hear where you're at, and they want to hear your story. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of it. So yes. That was cool that we put that in Volume 1. A couple of years later, it gets nominated for a Juno, and we get to celebrate that with our family. So to us, that was huge.
Yes, and it's healing too, right? And then, and thank you for sharing. And, you know, like, tell us, you know, some of the popular songs. I mean, there's Champion on there. Sugarcoated. So tell us, you know, some really, you know, hits, like, I mean, not hits, but people are really, you know, getting a wider audience, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Probably off that CD, some of the songs that performed the best was Thank God I'm Alive, mm-hmm. and Champion, I believe. And some of the previous stuff is still doing pretty well online and on social media and all that fun jazz. So we've been doing it for a while, and every little season's a little bit different, and we usually roll with the punches. And we've been grateful to have just unexpected results with a lot of our music. And so we're just going to keep on throwing stuff out there.
Yes, and I'm glad, you know, I mean, so, you know, so what do you want people to get from your music? Like, inspired. What else would you say?
Well, it's everything. I mean, even you were talking about our songwriting process. I mean, mm-hmm. it just varies. I mean, say we're writing a song like High Life or a Mic Drop, where it's more light and fun, and we just love to have sometimes just very fun, encouraging music, just uplifting music, mm-hmm. to pump people up. That's more of a light approach. So, you know, I'll come in, you know, with a guitar lick or something, for example. You know, it might be a simple guitar lick, and then Sean will find a melody on that, and then we'll lay it down, and then we'll kind of play around with it for days or weeks, or sometimes songs come really quickly, sometimes songs take a month or two or longer, so it's every song is different, and sometimes we want this song to have a certain impact, like, okay, a fun party song, and then we want this song, it is, you know, regarding whether it's passing someone or a time of healing, and we really want this to have a certain impact, and we're taking this song very seriously. So each one has a different approach. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say Sean, being the primary writer for Manic, he kind of really sits on a track for a very, very long time, and it really has to connect with him and with us, and it's like a interesting chemistry or relationship that happens with your music. It's almost kind of hard to explain, but I think artists get that, mm-hmm. especially when you're trying to relate a message to people.
Yes. And where are you, like, do you have a favorite place to write? Like, is there, like, you have your own studio, but is there other places, like, I don't know, like outside, like, or on tour, like, where do you get it? Like,
favorite place? I mean, place? A melody can strike you anywhere. I don't know about for Sean, but sometimes for me, I like to be kind of cloaked in darkness in a corner of a room on my computer, just writing words.
Yes.
I do that, and I just kind of play my guitar. I'm a very pencil to paper kind of guy. Sean, I've noticed, like, I kind of tease him because he'll be humming a melody in his head. He'll be driving the car or walking somewhere, and he's kind of nodding, mumbling to himself like he's lost his brain. But he's just going for melodies. Mm-hmm. So maybe song can share his sort of tactics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's just, I think my wife can attest to this as well. Anybody that knows me, I could disengage from a conversation and go into my own world and just be, you know, coming up with something and then start singing into my cell phone and like, oh, I just got to get this out. Just because it could be, being creative, it's really important to kind of just always exercise it, even if it's for fun, if it's, you know, playing words with puns, or it could be rhymes, or it could just be coming up with a musical melody or listening to another musical melody and being like, hey, what would I do? Just exercising it any way you can. So I try to do it daily, have a voice note recorder with me, because sometimes that creativity, if you can't think too hard about it, it needs to come in a relaxed, unexpected kind of moment. So if you can exercise it, and then just could be in the shower, could be driving, usually a place where it's just like you're doing something but not much. Usually yes. Something kind of clicks, and then your brain kind of wanders and you daydream, and it forms into something. It's kind of, I think it's pretty common now with songwriters. Everybody's doing the voice note stuff.
Yeah, so it's like being in that, I don't know if meditative mood or just feeling relaxed is where you can write your best stuff or come up with melodies. And you know, it's and now like with social media, like, what do you think with social media? I think it's helped with not, you know, with your music. I mean, other musicians, of course, but without, like, do you think social media has helped?
That's a good question. I think it's changed the game, and that's a big conversation to have, because, you know, there's a little bit more direct influence from the artist to some listeners, but now artists are going to have to deal with their own politics on how they want to market their own things and how they want to come across that. So it's a little bit more than being an artist right now, where a lot of the old traditional ways of doing things would have been a little bit more hedged with managers or record labels and kind of more aiming where artists need to go, where now it's kind of like the Wild West and artists just say and do things and you get it unfiltered and you get it tomorrow and they release a new stuff. So it's interesting how that would kind of change and affect things, but we'll see how it goes. It definitely has kind of made a new platform emerge, a new opportunity for people, and kind of opened up and rebirthed the industry. So we'll see how it goes for artists. And hopefully, I think the more power that gets into the artist's hands, the better it is. But kind of looks like with social media, it's already kind of being grappled by labels and things once again. So no idea.
Yes.
The whole conversation's a giant circle, you know?
Yes, things keep changing too, generally speaking. And like, tell us some highlights. Of your career. Like, I understand you were featured on NBC Universal and, you know, just, you know, some highlights.
We mentioned a couple of them prior, you know, some of the radio success we've had in the States. Dude Perfect, which is like a viral YouTube video. They just happened to be fans of us, and no idea how it happened. I didn't know who they were. The guy gives me a call and he's like, can we use your music on our videos? And I said, sure. I didn't know who Dude Perfect was. And then I looked them up and they got like millions upon billions of like fans and views on YouTube. They're like top five or something crazy. And I was like, whoa, that was obviously exciting. The arena tour called Winter Jam we did in 2019. But no, like those are kind of words of excitement. I think the most exciting thing is just every time we release something new, seeing the reactions of people that connect with it. And that's what we're looking forward to do with Volume 2.
Yes.
I was just going to share a personal highlight of me is when we, at the time it was called the ACC, when we played in our hometown and got to perform at the ACC. I think that was called the Scotiabank Arena.
But that, that had a cool impact on it because it's your hometown and this huge venue. And I think there was over 15 or 17,000 people in attendance, you know, not all, all there for us, but there's a big event that was put together with Lecrae and Thousand for Crutch. And we were part of the roster. And that was just, for me, that was a terrific moment.
Yes. And I mean, do you prefer touring, like being like performing in front of others or the audience, or do you like to, you know, work in the studio on songs, and or do you like both?
I think we like performance more. Mm-hmm. There's an energy and an art performance we've always fell in love with, or been in love with, sorry. Ever since we were kids, we just loved being on stage and running around and kicking and jumping as fast and as hard as we can, just because it was exciting, and that sort of energy you get in the organic setting with your audience and with your fans. And you know, that's something you can't really capture in the studio. The studio atmosphere is great. You're molding and creating something, mm-hmm. and something blossoms out of it. It's cool. I'm going to lean more on the performance art, more of it, but I'll let Sean answer and see what he has to say.
Yeah.
Sean?
Are you with him here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was just letting you take the stage there.
But do you prefer stage or do you prefer studio?
I like the mix, man. I like I like switching things up.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
And no. Sean's got more of that producer thing in him.
Yes. And you know, like I was going to like, so now you're working on volume 2, correct?
Yeah.
And so my next question is, what is next for you? Then, you know, you're working on volume 2. What else?
So right now we're getting ready for summer festival season. So we'll do kind of just weekend dates in Canada and the U.S. Just for these music festivals that go on annually. And then I guess we start gearing up for a small kind of tour in the fall, just with ourselves. And then we plan on probably doing more live performances in spring 2023, just because, mm-hmm. you know, with everything just starting to open up again, it takes months to kind of organize these tours. So this year it's still a little bit slow, so we're focused on releasing new music videos, starting with a song called I Love You to Death this Friday. Mm. And we'll kind of release those bi-monthly until we're hitting the road hard, performing them live again in end of 2022 and 2023.
Yes, I mean, it must feel so good to be now performing, you know, in front of people, you know, and just, you know, getting out there and doing what you love both, right? And you know, I want to ask you my last question. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Anything else? You'd like to ask or add?
Or add. You know, anything else you like? Add. Yes.
Just check us out on social media. Like, if you check out Manic Drive on YouTube, Spotify, whatever your listening platform is, check it out. If you like it, follow us on Instagram. We'd love to hook up, and maybe one day you'll see us live.
Yes, that'll be great. And I wanted to thank you very much for being on the show, and all the best to you, and congratulations. And I'd like to
thank you very much.
Do another interview in 6 months.
Perfect. We'd love that.
Thank you.